There's much debate on whether or not men and women are born homosexual. In fact, it's become a heated debate, even within the Christian community. But why debate it when you can talk to someone who's been on both sides of the issue? Today's guest will give you an inside peek into his battle with homosexuality and how his relationship with Christ brought him out. Real Men Connect is next.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. Each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Today we have with us Bob Fife, who is an Ontario-based businessman and a former practicing homosexual. Bob, along with Ron Hughes, is the author of Out: One Christian's Experience of Leaving the Gay Community. He has been out of the gay lifestyle for more than 20 years. Now reconnected with the church, he hopes his story points the way to grace and redemption. Today, he devotes his time to mentoring men and women who are looking for alternative ways to deal with same-sex attraction. I asked Bob to be on the Real Men Connect podcast today to talk to us about his personal journey out of the gay lifestyle and the advice he would share with men who are caught in the struggle. Welcome to the podcast, Bob.
My pleasure. Delighted to be here.
And Bob, I got to tell you, I already know that this is going to be a controversial topic. It shouldn't be because it's reality, but it's going to be a controversial topic for those who are listening because churches normally do not talk about this a lot. And so we kind of pride ourselves at Real Men Connect that we deal with real issues. We try to make it relevant. We try to make it real. And we try to make it practical, not super spiritual, but super practical, because we are looking for real answers in the real world. So, Bob, I got to tell you, I had a chance to read your book, and I told you, man, it was fascinating to me. And I must confess, too, that it was very emotional and difficult for me to read your book, because I can honestly trace some of my own life in it. But we'll get to that in a second, because I was on an emotional roller coaster as I read your book. But before we get started and we jump into your story and really hopefully blessing a lot of men out there, I always ask my guests to share their favorite Bible verse, Bob, with us that inspires them in the Word of God. What's your favorite Bible verse and why?
I think due to the journey that I've had and the victory that God has given me, I think the verse that I lay hold of the most is, "I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me."
And you say, based on your journey, that, and I think after reading your book, I can see why you would quote that verse. That's Philippians 4:13. And yes. I mentioned to you that it was a hard read for me because it struck a nerve as I was reading your book. And I tell you, I was on this emotional roller coaster. You share some very personal and difficult details about your life in the book. Why did you decide to write the book in the first place?
Well, I was prompted by a number of my friends who knew my story after a number of years of victory through the church and contact with many of my friends and so on. So I prayed about it. And as you know, it was 20 years ago that I came out of the gay lifestyle. And so that journey had all kinds of wonderful opportunities, and I prayed about it. And I asked my dear friend and brother in the Lord, Ron Hughes, if he would help me. He was an author of other books, and he volunteered to help me, and the rest is history. God has used the book in a mighty way, both through the church and through individuals that are seeking to leave the homosexual lifestyle.
And I got to tell you, Bob, the book is well written too. It was a easy read. I found myself being drawn into it. So kudos to Ron Hughes for helping you write that. He did a great job. So let's go into your story. I know we can't go into every detail because that's why they should get the book. Tell us about your family situation growing up, particularly the relationship you had with your father, because I think that's kind of where it started.
Yes. Well, my dad was out and about with other women all the time, and my mom had already bore at six of his or five of his kids, and you can be sure she didn't want to bring another one of his kids into the world. So I knew from an early age that I was an unwanted child. I even felt it, I think, in conception because of the way my dear mom felt towards my dad and so on for all that he was doing. He was very abusive to her and eventually abusive to me and to the entire family. And so that unwantedness from an early age extended through my childhood and even into maybe when I was 10 years old. I really had a hard time with my siblings and certainly with my father. And it was a very difficult childhood.
And you mentioned, so you were one of six kids and you were the youngest, right, Bob? I believe so in the book, you were the youngest.
Yes, I was.
And so you say you felt that you were unwanted, and you say that your dad was abusive to your wife and you guys, and you go a little bit into detail in the book about that. But one of the questions I wanted to ask you, after, as I was reading it, and I was writing down notes in the book and on note cards as I was reading it, with the abuse, you guys were able to kind of keep that under wraps and hidden from public view, primarily from the schools and the churches, because your mom went to church on a regular basis and took you guys. Did your mom ever talk to you guys about it? Did she ever talk to you and your sisters about the abuse? Because I don't think you ever mentioned that in the book.
Well, it was pretty open. I mean, there were times that my dad would, I didn't hear my mom say anything after a certain abuse. And I'd wonder sometimes whether she had survived. And one time, my sister and I even decided that we were going to run downstairs and phone the police. And so we did that and stood outside in our bare feet till the police came. And that was quite an experience. So it was very ongoing, and it was a difficult time for sure.
But I mean, but she didn't have a discussion like, well, kids, when your dad wasn't around, let's talk about this. How is this making you feel? Or what are you guys thinking when dad does this to me? You guys didn't like have open discussions with each other about this? Because there was no mention of that in the book. And I was wondering how, you know, it was like, we know this stuff is happening, but no one's talking about it.
Yeah, no, it wasn't discussed an awful lot in the family for sure.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that kind of jumped out at me, because that would be a hard thing to me to intentionally avoid talking about. But I guess it's kind of like that's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to discuss.
Yeah, we knew that he was very strong and very dominant in his approach to all of us. So we didn't need someone to say something about what the other one did or didn't do. So we kept it under wrap.
Wow. Wow. Which kind of explains then why it wasn't spoken about to the church or at school or anything else. Now, in your book, you talk about meeting your wife, Audrey, in a Bible study. I want you to talk to us about what attracted you to her. Well, you know what? Before we get to that question, let's go back, because you mentioned about your dad's abuse, but what we didn't talk about was the incident that happened to you as a child, which is vitally important, I believe, to your story.
Yes.
Tell us about what happened to you that started this same-sex attraction for you as a child.
Well, you know, I didn't have good, healthy identity, masculine identity growing up. I didn't have a relationship with my father. My brother, my oldest brother, was 12 years older than I was, so he was long gone as I was growing up. And so when I had this encounter with my sister's boyfriend one night on Beethoven's, and to me that it would was ever going to happen type of thing. But he came and it happened. And I couldn't properly identify with it, doctor, because it was really a difficult thing for me. I thought it might be a natural thing. I didn't know anything about homosexuality, so I didn't identify it as that. And so I misread the whole thing, and I kind of embraced it to some degree because it was something that I had never experienced. It was an attraction. It was an affection. It was a combination of things that I thought were maybe even normal. Mm-hmm. And so I had a false identity, and I carried that through, and I didn't tell anybody. I pursued it with this person for a little while, and then eventually it stopped. And I started to date girls. And then, as you mentioned, my wife, I eventually met my wife, and we courted for 6 years before we got married. And then we got married and had a son.
Now how old were you at the time? Because the kid in the book that you mentioned, who was your sister's boyfriend, you said his name was Roger. How old were you at the time, Bob, when that incident happened?
I was about 13.
Okay, 13. Because I was abused, you know, because let's call it what it was. It was abuse. It was molestation. And I was abused when I was 12. And so same like you, the same reaction. That's why I say I could relate to your story. The same reaction is that what's going on here? I don't understand what's going on. I didn't know what was happening. Is this supposed to happen? You know, that kind of thing. And so, yes. And how old was he at the time?
He was 2 years older than I was.
Okay.
Maybe, yeah, 2 or 3 years older than I was.
So you go through this ordeal and you don't know how to process it. Obviously, just like me, you didn't tell a soul about it and didn't know why it was happening. And so you just continue to go on. And there were other incidences after that, but wasn't from molestation, but it's more so you now pursuing your curiosity. Yes. About same sex and that kind of thing. So you had some encounters. Now let's go into you meeting Audrey. In the book, you said you met her at a Bible study.
Yes.
What attracted you to her? If you've had this experience in the past with same sex attraction now, what attracted you to her? Because you mentioned, as you just said, about you started trying to date and were meeting girls, but there was really no physical thing that you wanted to engage with them. And so you that didn't work. But what was about Audrey that was different that attracted you to her?
Well, you know, as I said before, my mom was a Christian. So she made it very clear that she was, she wanted us to be pure and proper in relation to our opposite sex, you know, not to, to get a girl into trouble or that kind of thing. So I was conscious of that, even in dating girls. And so Audrey and I, we grew in spiritual things. It was an amazing relationship before we eventually got married. And I guess the big thing with all of that was that we grew in the Lord. I was saved when I was 15. Jesus Christ came into my heart and life, and we just grew together. It was an incredible journey with her until such time as I ran into a circumstance in a situation after we got married.
Now, back to Audrey again. So obviously it was a spiritual connection there. Were you ever physically or sexually attracted to her when you were, when you guys were getting together and Bible study and everything? Was there any physical or sexual attraction to her?
Well, I certainly was attracted to her for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I would say I was attracted to her for her purity, for her wholeness, for her beauty internally and physically. But I knew that I wasn't going to pass the line in terms of having a sexual encounter with her. And I trusted God that would unfold and develop, and it did. Mm-hmm. In our early relationship.
Right. Now, why did you consider it unnecessary to tell Audrey before you got married about the incident with Roger and the other boys you had been with prior to meeting her? Because you mentioned in the book that you didn't tell her about it until you had to, you were kind of forced to tell her. I won't give away what happened. But why did you think it was unnecessary to tell her before you got married?
Well, there were quite a few years that had passed by that this was aside or under the carpet, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't tell her because it didn't seem like it was as important to talk about,
right,
as it really was, to be open and honest about that, because she was a nurse. Mm-hmm. And she would have understood the situation, as she did when she did find out,
right,
she was anxious to help.
Right. And see, and I ask you that, Bob, because I didn't tell my ex-wife about the abuse I had gone through before we got married. And now, I can't speak for you, but looking back on that, do you wish you had told Audrey before you guys, you say you guys, what, was 6 years before you guys got mm-hmm. married? Do you, yes. Looking back now, do you wish you had talked to her about it before things?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I do wish that I had. And we would have probably at that time, I would have heard more of her input and her support and help to work it through.
And see, and I bring that up because I know the men out there listening who may be dealing with similar issues in their lives. People always ask me if I could go back and do anything different in my life, what would it be? And I said that I would have spoke up about the abuse sooner. And my son, yes. who's now 20 years old, he asked me, he said, "Dad, you wouldn't have stopped the abuse?" I said, "Well, I can't control what other people do, but I can control how I respond." And I said, "I did not respond well." I said, "What he did to my body, I allowed it to be done to my mind and my spirit." And I wish I would have opened my mouth at 12 years old when it first happened. And I wish I would have told my ex-wife about it before we got married. That's why I asked you the question. Now, yes. and if you want to answer this question, you can, Bob, but you don't have to, because if you might want to protect her privacy. But how is Audrey doing now?
She's doing great. She lives in Florida. She's involved. She's remarried. She is working with Wycliffe Translators in translating the Bible for some of the country, some of the tribes in Africa. She's a godly woman. One of the reasons I've never remarried is because I got to tell you, she is still the apple of my eye. I would crawl to Florida if I had to, if I thought I could get her back. I asked my son one time to ask her if anything ever happened to her current husband, would she take me back? You wanted to hear what she said? She said, "No, she wouldn't take me back."
Oh, well.
But that's okay. I'm in love with the Lord, and the Lord has sufficiently satisfied me in my heart, in my life, and so on. So I love her, though. I got to tell you, I do love her. And we have a good friendship. She consented to the book. She's a great lady, and I wish her Godspeed.
And I was going to ask you about that. How does she feel about you writing about all of this and sharing it with the world? So she's good with that. She's okay with that.
She consented. When we needed to get her consent, because as you know, there's things in the book about her.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So we needed to do that. And she willingly consented. I'm not sure if she's read the book, because we spoke about maybe the book was only released in October. We spoke a while back, and I think her plan was to get a copy.
Right. You know, it's funny you mentioned about, you ask, would she marry you again if she had a chance? My ex-wife, if you offered $1 million a day, she wouldn't marry me again. And we're on good terms. We actually are good friends. We're friendly. Let's put it that way. We're friendly.
Yeah.
But I caused too much damage, man. But God has blessed me. Like you said, he gave me grace and mercy and brought a wonderful woman in my life right now, who she knows about my past, but thank God she didn't have to live through it. Now let's get more into now of you coming out. The title of your book is called Out. What was the real catalyst for you leaving the gay community? Because there's a lot of instances I see where you tried and failed and everything. What was the real catalyst for you leaving?
My son.
Your son?
My son, Sean. He visited me after a number of years where we never had any contact, maybe 10, 12 years where I didn't see him. And when his mom moved down to or went down to Texas, he came and visited me. And I picked him up at the airport. He didn't know what I looked like. I didn't know what he looked like. And it was kind of a neat encounter. And when we got back to my apartment, I said to him, "Sean, do you know about me?" And he said, "Yes, I do, Dad." And I kind of melted a bit because I hadn't heard that word dad for a long, long time. And it was pretty precious to me to hear that. And the next thing he said was, "Dad, I just want you to know that my love for you is unconditional." Well, I have to tell you that I didn't know very much about unconditional love. Because one thing that happens, and you might know this too, from being out there in the world, and especially in the gay world, there are a lot of conditions on us. We have to perform. We have to look good. We have to say the right thing. We have to do all these things. And it's pretty conditional a lot of times. And I knew that. And I tried to reach and meet those conditions over and over again. So when I heard about unconditional love, I thought, wow, I think I need to lay hold of this. And God revealed himself to me too, because Sean just said to me, "Dad, God's love for you is unconditional, even where you are and your circumstance." And so I had to say that it was that day that God really spoke to me in a big way. And it was through my son, and I'm grateful to this day for that day.
You know, you say that about unconditional love. I've often told people, especially when I was in my pit, that you don't really understand unconditional love until you need it, until you need it. And I said, we can talk about loving people all we want to, but we don't really understand unconditional love until you require it yourself. That's when you start to understand what it is. But Bob, you mentioned something in the book, because you talk about Sean in the beginning of the book, which it was a great setup for their whole, I like the way they set up the book. And you mentioned, but you mentioned something that was very powerful. I don't even think you knew what the statement that you guys wrote in the book, but you said that you were less in Sean's life than your dad was in yours, and your dad was abusive. Now, to me, that spoke volumes to me, because my question was, and I couldn't wait to get you on and ask you, what happened? Why did you disconnect yourself from your son? And why wasn't there drawn to say, hey, my dad was not there for me. I'm going to be there for my son.
Well, I think it had a lot. Well, I don't think I know it had a lot to do with Audrey. Audrey did not want me to be a Santa Claus daddy. She didn't want me coming. They moved to the far end of the country. They moved to out west in British Columbia. And she didn't want me come bearing gifts and being a sugar daddy kind of thing. And then her, after the fact, happened to deal with all of the issues with Sean and so on. So she actually didn't want me to visit him growing up. Eventually, I got a job with an airline as a salesperson, and I was able to travel free anywhere in the world. So I used to go a couple of times. I drove out, or I should say I flew out to where they were and parked the car in front of the house just so I could see him playing in the backyard. So it wasn't that I didn't want to have a connection with him. I did. But I had to respect where she was coming from, and eventually she did let me see him when he was about 12, and then he came to see me when he was in his early 20s, and that's when God was ready to call me back, and it was when my son was ready to step into my life and be a very intricate part of my life.
And what a, I mean, to see that Sean started to be the catalyst. He was the beginning and he was the igniter, But how did your relationship with God enable you to make such a drastic change in your life? Because you really tried. And, you know, I find myself when I'm reading the book rooting for you. But I know that because I know now going through recovery and getting people in support groups that if you don't get the help you need, you're going to go back because you're white knuckling it. And so Obviously you had to go through that process and learn that for yourself. But how did your relationship with God enable you to make such a drastic change in your life?
Well, one thing, I was hungry for that new relationship with God, and the fact that he received me back to himself, and like the prodigal son, he embraced me. He gave me to know that he was there for me, and I know the depth of energy and pursuit that I had while I was in the gay life. I mean, I was heavy duty into pursuit of that. I was president of the Gay Business Council in the city. I managed gay bars. I played in the Gay World Series. I was really, really engaged, and I wanted that to come out in the book because it wasn't a slight thing. I wanted to tell that story. And so when God restored me to himself, I wanted to, and praise his name, he enabled me to pursue him with body, soul, and spirit to the degree that from that day to this day, he has given me victory. And I don't understand it. I appreciate what God has done for me and so on. And I do honestly I can honestly say it's not let go and let God. It's joining in with God and being a clay in the potter's hand, being a servant of a great God and Lord who wants to reveal himself to us and share a life worthwhile for each of us. So it's it really is that. It was literally trying to put as much energy, and God tells us that in his word, to put as much energy into pursuit of him as we did into pursuit of the things that we thought would satisfy but never will satisfy. And so that's kind of where it's at. It's body, soul, and spirit to be committed to him, and through him we can do all things.
You know, Bob, you bring up such a great point, and I'm going to reiterate it because I don't want it to go right by the listener's ear. Because we, you know, they have the joke is that we're all X something. We're all X something. Yeah. And
how true.
People, you know, when I rededicated my life to Christ and my friend who led me to Christ, we both had crazy lifestyles. I would call it wild lifestyles. Before we gave our lives to Christ. And I remember him telling me one day, because I knew him before he got saved, before he led me back to the Lord. And he was into everything. Like you said, he was the president of this. He was that. I mean, the worst type of clubs. He was he was the president. He was the most popular guy in this. And I asked him, I said, wow. I said, man, you really are on fire for the Lord. You really are pursuing with all your heart, soul, and mind. I said, yeah. I am shocked. I said, you're doing a 180 degree turn. This is amazing. And Bob, he shared what you just said. He says, Joe, when I was out in the world, I know what it was like to pursue the world with everything I had in me. He said, why would I give God any less? And that spoke volumes to me. So when people started asking me the same thing, they said, Joe, what you used to be, but seeing what you are now, what happened? I said, if I could pursue the world's stuff with all that passion and fire and determination and grit, why can't I pursue the same type of level of relationship with the God who created me? And so Amen. When you said that, that resonated with me. And I hope that those who are listening will let that sink into their spirit, because whatever you used to be, you probably were a good X something, you know, yeah. Put that same focus back into your walk with Christ. Now,
oh yeah.
Now, Bob, according to your book, you mentioned this now, but you said much of the homosexual mindset is wrapped around the idea of identity. But I'm going to ask you a very tough question. Do you agree or disagree when you hear people say they were born gay? How does that, what does that provoke or evoke in you when you hear that?
Well, I think while I was in the thick of it, I kind of thought that maybe I was. But now, wow, I know. You'll notice I said I thought, but now I know that I was not born gay. I was born asexual, and the slant that I received was that towards, when it came to sex, was towards homosexuality, and that's what drew me in. And there were all those other contributing factors, not having a true healthy male identity, and having a bit of an absentee mom because she had to work a lot, and siblings that weren't too interested in me as a younger kid, and so on. Immediately above me were my three sisters, so that had a significant influence. I believe that we are definitely not born homosexuals. We are born sexual, but, and the slant comes wherever the emphasis is. And for me, I know where the emphasis was. It's different for everybody in a lot of ways. You know, different contributing factors. Remember in the 70s, when I first came out into homosexuality, it's not like it is today. And as a result, there are different reasons and different prompts that people have towards it. But for me, it was environmental. It was my upbringing that contributed to it. And I identified with that more and more as I came to grips with different aspects and brought it out from under the carpet and dealt with it. The church was an amazing help in it all, and so were some of the ministries that I was involved in. I was accountable to godly people, and so all of those things had a major effect on me. But I did have to come, and this is key, I did have to come to healthy identity.
And I agree with you on that, because that is such a, I don't see why it's so controversial. And we hear people say that I was born gay. This has been in me. And I look at like, and I like the way you put it, Bob. You said that we're sexual. I realized I was a sexual being too, but it got out of hand. And I started pursuing every woman I could find. And if someone would say, Joe, you were just born that way, I'm like, no, I wasn't. I wasn't born that way. You know, that's what happens when I pursue my appetites without restraint, you know,
absolutely.
Because you say, so I'm a born adulterer. No, I'm not a born adulterer. I chose to be. And I love what Vody Bachum, who's a pastor out of Houston, Texas, he says that homosexual is not something that you are. It's something you do. It's a practice. It's a practice. And so that means any person who is caught in anything that is not pleasing to God, that is a sin, you're saying that's what he or she is. That's not his identity. That's not who he is, who God sees him as in Christ. Now, you mentioned your identity. How has your concept or definition of your identity changed through this process?
Well, you know, I used to sexualize, if somebody came up to you and put their arm around you, same sex or something, you had either a good or a bad feeling about that because you sexualized all your contact, your identity was, you know, at that level. And it's important, like, you know, I never remembered sitting on my dad's knee, never mind him hugging me or giving me a kiss on the cheek or something like that. So as I grew in my spiritual life, in my relationship with godly men and the men in my church and friends and so on, wow, it was incredible. I mean, we didn't just shake hands when we met. We would hug each other, and we didn't sexualize it or anything. It was beautiful. It was the way it's supposed to be, and it's the way it is today, and it's incredible how one can have those blessings in their life in terms of new healthy relationships. So it's all about that for me anyway. Of you don't have to sexualize everything. People say to me, "Well, how are you now?" And I said, "Well, it's incredible. I can say that's a good looking guy, or I can say that's a good looking woman, or I like the color of that car, but I don't have to sexualize it."
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you must identify with that.
Exactly. Because you know, people ask me that the same thing all the time. They said, "Joe, when you were out there with, you know, all those women and everything, said, now, is it hard being faithful to one woman?" I said, "No, I say it's just, I see women differently now. It doesn't mean that temptation isn't there, but I know who I am. Like you said, my identity has changed. And I'm not who I used to be. I'm a new creature in Christ. He says that the old is gone and the new has come. But I'm going to ask you this, Bob. What advice would you give to that person who is struggling with the temptation, whether it be same sex or whatever, when it comes to sexualizing and objectifying another person? What advice would you give them?
Well, the first thing I would say is get to know Jesus Christ more. Come into a true, meaningful relationship with Jesus Christ. Read his word. Pray. Take those incredible stories and apply them to your own life. You know, the story of Peter or the story of Timothy or the story of John and different characters in the Bible. Just get to know this great God through Jesus Christ. And that's the secret. It's you gotta, you know, if you don't replace what you had with what you can have in Christ, then you're robbing yourself. And it's important for you to come into that meaningful, beautiful relationship. I am mentoring men every day as to their relationship with Jesus Christ. If somebody's slipping or if somebody's struggling, immediately I can almost say that, you know what, you need to lay hold of Jesus Christ and you need to pursue those things that are worthwhile and so on. I had a guy tell me a few days ago that he hadn't read his Bible in a week and he couldn't understand why he was struggling. Well, you know what? You put yourself on a spiritual diet, you might, and you'll lose. You may we're not losing weight here. You'll lose your connection and your intimacy with Jesus Christ.
And Bob, you know, for the person out there, because you were really, like you said, you weren't just experimenting in the gay culture in that environment. You were totally immersed in it. You were actively involved in, and you didn't have any qualms about it. But obviously, you couldn't just get out just by quickly. And if there's a guy who's struggling, who finds himself in the same situation, stuck in that lifestyle, what resources are available to him?
Well, there are lots of ministries that are out there that are available. And I would recommend that they look for those ministries that are there. For me, it was really important. That's what was important for me, was to bring it out from under the carpet, to put it on the table. I often say, if you don't deal with it, it will deal with you. It'll come back and haunt you later on in life. It's the same thing in the church. If the church doesn't deal with sin, a little leaven will leaven the whole lump. And it's important for us in our life to bring it out, put it on the table, try and identify with the issues at large, whatever they are, if it's a father issue, if it's a mother issue, whatever the issue is, just try to identify with it and find someone that you can confide in and so on. And you know, I mentor people almost every day in these matters, because people, they're not sure, and they need to be helped and encouraged in these things. So there are lots of ministries, and the most important ministry that comes is the church. And I often say the church is not a hotel, it's a hospital. It's a place where we can go and we can receive healing. And there are people there that will love us properly and will help us and encourage us as we go. So those are the ways in which I would strongly recommend that an individual goes. And another thing, doctor, that I would mention is that my book is not for somebody that seems to be happy and pursuing the gay lifestyle. My book's not for that person. My book is for the person that realizes that God created them, that they are meant for him in a proper fashion, man and woman, and that God has that purpose for them, and they want out.
And Bob, you know, I mentioned earlier when we were introducing you on the show that this is going to be a controversial topic. And some people may say, well, John, I don't see anything so controversial about what you guys discuss. And you know, talking about Bob's story. But the reason why I say controversial, and you helped me out on this, Bob, because I don't know you personally, but I would assume that after you wrote this book or started talking about it, that you probably received a lot of pushback from people in the gay community about this. Have you've got some hostility? Has that happened to you? And how have you responded to it, if it has?
Well, I've had a little bit, but not very much, because you know what? People can't really argue with my story.
Right.
It's your story. It's my story. It's right. My experience.
Right.
And they can either give in to the Spirit of God and the opportunity to enter into the victory that's been mine, or they can shun it. And we know all about that. We know that that's what happens. You know, people turn their back against God, and they want to live in the way that that they think pleases. And you know, there really is you would vouch for this as well, and that is that once you're in a form of addiction or a sexual attraction, there are many other things that come into play. I was a pothead, you know? I kept pursuing other things and other things and other things because none of them really satisfied. And so, you know, whereas in Christ, we can be satisfied and we can grow be mighty for God in different ways. So that's the type of person that I would appeal to in my book. And so I haven't had a lot of, ridicule or whatever, because, like I said, it's my experience. It's my story. You can't take that away from me. And it's real.
Well, Bob, I'm going to be the antagonist then, just just to make it interesting, because I want to know I'm going to play this role and I want you to tell me how you respond to me. I read your book, because like you just said, no one should be reading your book if they're happy and content in the lifestyle that they've chosen and think, mm-hmm. Oh, this is just me. But if that person looking for a way out or think, is there a possibility, is there hope? Yes, they need to pick up your book. So I'm going to pretend I'm this person who just picked up your book. And then I read your book and I hear your story and I come to you and I say, okay, now, Bob, I understand the situation and what you went through, but it's totally different from my situation. See, I grew up in a good home, Bob, with good parents, well-adjusted. And I've known since I was in elementary school that I was different and I was attracted to men. It's not as easy as you say it is just to turn it off. Bob, what would you say to me if I told you that?
Well, I would say that, you know, the thing that's so important in all of that is that I'm not going to dwell on the fruits of homosexuality. I'm not going to concentrate on the lifestyle as a whole. I'm going to focus and concentrate when I'm talking to an individual on their relationship with Jesus Christ. That to me is the most important thing. That's important in their life. I don't spend my time condemning. I don't condone, but I don't condemn. And at the same time, I want to give that person the real purpose in life, and that is to know and to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. So if you know what? It's not my job to convict of sin and of righteousness. It's the Spirit's job. And so I don't nip at the buds. I'm more interested in the root issue, and that is the relationship either in salvation or in growth in Jesus Christ. And that's where I come from with that individual. And so I have a chap in my book, his name is Frank, and I say in the book, and it's true, he was here for New Year's at my house with his family. We go back many, many years in our growth in the Lord and so on. And I loved him out, as it were. I loved him out. I didn't dwell on the issue. And I think the issues are what the church is doing wrong in this day and age. I think we don't need to focus on the issues. We need to focus on the need for Jesus Christ in their life.
You know, and Bob, and I'm glad you said that, because we're coming to the end of the interview. And I think that'll be a great question to close with as we close out this episode. And I think you've given a great deal of information to us, and I think it was very helpful. I would encourage whether, you know, they're struggling with this or not, just to read your book, because somebody is struggling with something. You know, your thing happened to be same-sex attraction, but it could be anything. But I think they need to read your book, just because it's just an inspirational book to read. But you just alluded to it, and we'll close out with this last question. You mentioned the church. What do you think churches can do to reach out? Because obviously you think they can do a better job than they're doing right now. What do you think they can do to reach out to those who are in the homosexual community, in the gay community?
Well, I think the thing that they can do is, first of all, like I said, they just need to help that person grow in the Lord. If they're professing Jesus Christ as their Savior, and there are many homosexuals who struggle with the life, who would claim to be Christians. We know what that means. That means to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And so if they have that, then what the church needs to do is to encourage them in the things of the Lord. If they're active in the gay lifestyle, that's another story. I think that you have to identify with that. You're not going to condone that as a church or even as an individual in the true sense of it, but you need to encourage that person and help that person along the way, and don't get off on the, as I say, the fruits of homosexuality. Focus on the root issues and the importance of growth and maturing in the spiritual, in the relationship with Jesus Christ. And the church can do that in a big way. And the individual involved needs to do that. The church is not a place to just go and receive. The church is a place to go and give of your service, of your life, and so on, for the Lord. And the word church is body. It means body, right? So we're part of that. As to what part we are, we need to realize that we are, and we have something to offer and not just to take.
Good job, Bob. That's a good place for us to stop. This has been a fantastic interview. And well, man, we've reached the end of our show today, but don't you worry, we'll be back to do it all again next week with a new guest, with new insights and new lessons, so make sure you don't miss it. And I'd like to thank Bob Fife for joining us today, for being so gracious with his time. Bob, thank you so much for not only writing your book, but agreeing to come on the show and be transparent and vulnerable about and honest about your journey and how God has turned your life around, that now you're helping other people get out. So thank you so much for joining us today.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
And Bob, quickly for our listeners, we keep mentioning the book, but if they wanted to find out more about you and what you're doing, or how to get the book, What's the best way to reach out to you or connect with you?
Well, my website, bobsexperience.com, is a good way. Or if they want to email me, they can email me at bobsexperience.com, go to the website and find out my email address there. And that would certainly be a way in which they could receive knowledge of how to contact me.
Okay. You said that's Bob's Experience with an S after Bob, B-O-B-S, yeah. experience.com. And they can go to your website. They can get the book. They can email you through that. And we'll make sure we put that in the show notes for you as well. So anytime that they come across it, they'll have a link to get to you. And guys, quickly, this is for all of you out there who are listening. Make sure, do us a huge favor, make sure you go over and to iTunes and take about 30 seconds and rate the program for us. It's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. Guys, you've made us number one on iTunes for Christian men, and we appreciate that. So please don't keep us a secret. Keep sharing us with your friends. Until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So choose every day to be the man God called and created you to be. Because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in his grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
Real Men Connect is a listener-supported podcast, and we're now the number one radio podcast on iTunes for Christian men. If this podcast has blessed you in any way and you'd like to help us continue to bless and transform the lives of even more husbands, fathers, sons, and leaders, please prayerfully consider supporting this ministry. Just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the donate button. And may God bless your faithful giving.